Hello, Mike. Thank you. And hello, everyone. Welcome to yet another episode of Broken Bread. This comes to you from Mike Cold, from newliferadio.co.uk in Exeter, and myself, Ron Bailey, from BibleBase.com in Reading, both places in the United Kingdom. It's good to have your company. We look forward to this time, week by week, when we can share these things together. And I thought I'd just take a moment or two to remind folks as to how you can consume your online diet of Bible studies that are coming from Bible Base. First of all, this comes out on Mike's radio program on 7 p.m. on a Thursday evening, and that's the first live launch of it. And then, about half an hour later than that, it's published onto the Bible Base Podcasts website. You get that from any podcast catcher you're using. Just search for Bible Base Podcasts and you'll find quite a lot of things that we've done there over the years. So that's the second way. When Mike has published his radio broadcast, it immediately becomes part of Mike's archive, so it means that you can always return to the radio station and replay anytime you like. There's a lot of other really great stuff on there. What's next? Okay, well, it also goes on to our Bible Base or Friends of Bible Base Facebook group. It also goes on to our BibleBase.com website. So you can find it in all these kind of ways. Oh, and yes, it also goes on to YouTube as well. So there are lots of ways you can find this. And we're always grateful for people telling us how they're consuming this product and what suits them best. Okay, let's make a start, shall we? So this is A Day in the Life of Moses, Part 1. This is going to take us two sessions. Introduction. Haven't we been here before? That's usually the reaction to reading the book of Deuteronomy for the first time. And the reaction is understandable. That's why it's called Deutero, second, and Nomos, law. It's Deuteronomy. It's the second giving of the law, and the whole book is the account, in my opinion, of a single day. Some people will tell you that this is a series of sermons or messages that Moses gave over several days. I think the whole pattern of this book is emphasizing that this is a single day. More to say about that a little bit later. It's another illustration of the variable passage of time that we find in the chapter-by-chapter reading of the scriptures. In fact, it seems that this was Moses' last day. The people group that witnessed Sinai are now mostly buried in the wilderness. This is a new generation. Aaron, the anointed priest, is dead. So is his sister Miriam. Moses and the people of Jehovah stand on the threshold of great changes. Moses, however, will not enjoy them. His journey has come to its end. There is a sense in which they're starting all over again. 40 years have passed since the original establishment of the covenant and the giving of the law. All those bright expectations are now in the dust. The sequence of the first 5 books of the Bible gives us a clear timeline of the people's journey. For example, Genesis is the book of beginnings and ends with the family of Jacob or Israel in Egypt. The storyline covers more than 2,300 years. Exodus, the second book of the Pentateuch, tells the story of their descent into slavery and the way in which they were released from the service of Pharaoh and brought into the service of God by redemption and covenant. That storyline covers more than 200 years. Leviticus, the priestly book, gives the instructions for the maintenance element of the covenant, the priesthood and the nations. The storyline covers less than a year. Numbers gives the preparations for the journey and the counting, assembling, a census of the armies ready for the conquest of the land. It quickly descends into a series of disasters, covering a period of almost 40 years. Deuteronomy will be a long message or series of messages and a roadmap for the 11-day journey to the Promised Land, and is full of wonderful promises and solemn warnings for God's people. The storyline covers a certain day, a single day. So the Pentateuch covers more than, possibly much more than, 2,500 years of history. Let's dig a little bit deeper. Today, says the Bible, if you hear his voice, do not harden your hearts. There's a real emphasis on today in the book of Deuteronomy. Today or this day, that little phrase is repeated again and again. This is a distribution graph I'm going to show you in a moment or two. These are the words, this is Deuteronomy chapter 1, verses 1 to 3. These are the words which Moses spake unto all Israel beyond the Jordan, that's to say on the eastern side of the Jordan, in the wilderness, in the Arabah, over against Suf, between Paran and Tophel, and Laban and Hazeroth and Dizahab. It is 11 days' journey from Horeb by the way of Mount Seir unto Kadesh Barnea. And it came to pass in the 40th year. What a tragedy contained in just those few words. It is 11 days' journey from Horeb, that's the other word of the name for Sinai, 11 days' journey that took them the best part of 40 years. It's 11 days' journey from Horeb by the way of Mount Seir unto Kadesh Barnea. And it came to pass in the 40th year, in the 11th month, on the first day of the month, that Moses spake unto the children of Israel according to all that Jehovah had given him in commandment unto them. Deuteronomy chapter 1, verses 9 to 10. And I spoke to you at that time, saying, I alone am not able to bear you. Jehovah your God has multiplied you, and here you are today as the stars of heaven in multitude. Can you see that contrast between I spoke to you at that time and here you are today? That is 40 years in between those two phrases. I spoke to you at that time, and here you are today. And we're introduced to this concept of today. The usage of today, or this used, a little phrase, in Genesis to Deuteronomy, that's what we call the Pentateuch, is really, I think, very instructive. This is a computer program that I have that I'm able to do some, I can follow some hunches up. Here's a spread. If you're not looking at this, I'll just explain it. Here's a spread of from Genesis through to Deuteronomy. And you'll see that the phrase today or this day is used kind of sparingly through Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers. And then you hit Deuteronomy and there are spikes all over the place. And simply because of the 113 references that are to this little phrase today or this day, in the books of Deuteronomy, 113, 73 of them are in the book of Deuteronomy. The whole emphasis of Deuteronomy is this day, this day, this is the day. It's not a repetition of Sinai, but a new beginning. Not a covenant, but a renewal of the Sinai covenant. Maybe you know that the Methodists, following their leader, John Wesley, to this day, usually still have an annual covenant renewal service. I think there's much to be said for annual covenant renewal services. This is the setting for a brand new beginning. Spiritually, they'll be brought back to their old starting point. There's a line in one of Graham Kendrick's old songs, and he says, I'd like to be a martyr if it didn't hurt too much, but I'll give you my permission to push me in. And in the middle of that, he has this little phrase and he says, I see that you are asking for much more than I first bargained for. It seems I stand once more at the beginning of it all. I like that sentiment. It seems that you are asking for much more than I first bargained for. I seem to stand once more at the beginning of it all. I don't know about you, but that is the testimony of my life over many years now. You know, discover day by day that you're in deeper than you thought you were, and that God is asking for more than you first bargained for. Okay, so this is the setting for a brand new beginning. Spiritually, they'll be brought back to that old starting point. The book of Deuteronomy has more references to the Sinai Covenant than any other book in the Bible. So the Sinai Covenant is the backdrop, but this is a new expression of it. Deuteronomy chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. And Moses called unto all Israel and said unto them, Hear, O Israel, the statutes and the ordinances. You see, it isn't just the Ten Commandments, it's the whole bundle. The statutes and the ordinances which I speak in your ears this day, that you may learn them and observe them. There are three key words here. Hear, O Israel, the statutes and the ordinances which I speak in your ears, that ye may learn them and observe to do them. Hear, learn, observe, and do them. That's the pattern for progress into this covenant you've signed up for. Jehovah our God made a covenant with us in Horeb. Then there's a clear distinction between the Abrahamic covenant and the Sinai covenant. The Bible does this a couple of times. It's important to notice that the Abraham covenant and the Sinai covenant are different. They have a connection, but they're not the same thing. This is Deuteronomy chapter 5, verses 2 and 3. Jehovah our God made a covenant with us in Horeb. That's the other name for Sinai. Jehovah made not this covenant with our fathers, in other words, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, but with us, even us, who are all of us here alive this day. There you go, another this day. This is actually how this story started off. God appeared to Abraham, or he appeared to Moses, and he said, And I appeared unto Abraham, unto Isaac, and unto Jacob as God Almighty. But by my name Jehovah I was not known to them. So God is going to enter through Moses the mediator into a different covenant. It has links with the Abrahamic covenant, but it's different. And we must need to keep them different and separate in our minds, because the fact that the Abraham covenant lasted for many years before the Sinai covenant was put by the side of it, that's Paul's language, put by the side of it, so it was attached to, it didn't become part of the Abraham covenant, but it was attached to it. Actually, it wasn't attached, it just rested by the side of it. But I'm just illustrating this. We must keep in mind the difference between the nature of the Abraham covenant and the Sinai covenant. The Abraham covenant was basic and original. The Sinai covenant was additional and temporary. And this is what Paul is speaking about when in Galatians chapter 3, verse 19 and 20, he asks a question and then answered himself, as is his pattern. What purpose then does the law serve? He's been talking about justification by faith and the fact that Abraham was uncircumcised. He was not keeping the law when he was justified by faith. And so he then asks the perfectly natural question, what purpose then does the law serve? It was added, literally put by the side of, because of transgressions, until the seed should come to whom the promise was made. And we talked about that at length in two sessions called A Day in the Life of Abraham, which took two studies. What purpose then does the law serve? It was added because of transgressions till the seed should come to whom the promise was made. And that seed is Christ, says Paul. And it was appointed through angels by the hand of a mediator. Now a mediator does not mediate for one only, but God is one. And we've already referred several times to the fact that the Sinai covenant is land-based. It is in Deuteronomy that we see this worked out thoroughly. Deuteronomy is not merely a rerun of Exodus and Sinai. It's not you kind of just rerunning the tapes. It is the original Sinai covenant reapplied with a particular end in view. And the particular focus of Deuteronomy is the connection between the keeping of the Sinai covenant and the possession of the promised land. If we dig a little deeper, we discover that the word Eretz, which is the Hebrew word for land, occurs almost 200 times in the book of Deuteronomy. It's the word you keep on coming up against, and it's often linked to the word possess. So Deuteronomy is all about the law, but it's about the way that the law serves a purpose in enabling the covenant people to possess the land that God had promised to them. The promised land was given to the covenant community, but they would need to take it, and they would only take it as they kept the covenant agreement. There's an interesting, tragic illustration of this. Achan and the broken covenant. The conquering people had taken Jericho and the next town en route was Ai. But they were presumptuous in their expectation of an easy victory, and the willful disobedience of one man and the connivance of his family brought a simple victory to a crushing defeat. In the whole conquest of Canaan, it is the only battle that has a body count for forces of the covenant people. If you follow through, you'll see lists of the battles and the tens of thousands of people who died, who were the people who dwelt originally in Canaan. It was the land vomiting them out, it says in another part of the scripture. But there's only one body count, and that's here at Ai. And if I remember rightly, it's 37 people. 37 people of the covenant people died, all here in this one tragic battle. It's a picture in one way that although there will be many battles, God intends to have us have victory after victory after victory. If we follow his instructions, there need be no defeats. If we depend upon our Joshua to lead us and to instruct us in the way that we should go, God has promised the land to him, and he will make sure that we inherit it. The whole story is found in Joshua 7, but we will just focus on the indictment that was brought against the nation, and Achan in particular. This is Joshua chapter 7, verses 11 to 12. Israel hath sinned, yea, they have even transgressed my covenant, which I commanded them. You see how God focuses in? It's not just the avarice, it's not just the selfishness, it's not just the disobedience. It's the fact that Achan and his family have broken the covenant. It's the first breaking of the covenant in the promised land. And the judgment that comes upon him and his family is extreme. Yea, they have taken of the devoted thing, and have also stolen and dissembled. That means they've played the hypocrite also. And they have even put it among their own stuff. He buried the spoils of his guilty action under the floor of his tent. Obviously, the whole family would have known that it was there. Therefore, the children of Israel cannot stand before their enemies. They turn their backs before their enemies because they are become accursed. It's interesting, it's devoted. It's the same word translated devoted and translated accursed. I will not be with you any more, except ye destroy the devoted thing from among you. So Israel sustained its first defeat because the covenant had been broken. This principle has long-term implications. Only a covenant-keeping people could conquer the land. And only a covenant-keeping people would be able to hold it. Keeping the covenant gave them access into their tenancy. And keeping the covenant was their tenancy agreement. There's a Latin phrase, I think, isn't the caveat emptor, which means let the buyer beware. In other words, if you're buying someone, it's your response, buying something, it's your responsibility to check It's what it claims to be. There's another Bible detail to keep in mind here. The nation of Israel never owned the promised land. And that might surprise you. The nation of Israel was never intended to own the promised land. They were tenants. Now, I don't know how this works out in other countries, but in English law, the purchase of a property may be freehold or leasehold. If I buy a property that is legally leasehold, I'm really only renting the land on which the house is sitting. At the end of the leasehold period, the land and anything that I have additionally built on it must revert to the owner of the land. If I buy my house freehold, I'm buying both the building and the land. Now, the nation of Israel and its families held their land leasehold. The land owner was Jehovah himself. Listen to this important detail of the tenancy agreement. Leviticus chapter 25, and verse 23. And the land shall not be sold in perpetuity, for the land is mine, for ye are strangers and sojourners with me. Technically, property under the Sinai covenant could not be sold permanently outside the family. Each generation of the family held the property in trust for the next generation, and the land belonged to Jehovah. On entering the promised land, these territories were entrusted to the different family tribes. Every 50 years, each portion of the land had to revert to its original family. This plan was a wonderful plan. It ensured that wealthy landowners did not accumulate vast estates that would create a permanent underclass of farm workers rather than farm owners. There are more details in Leviticus chapter 25, verses 30 to 31. This seems to have been greatly ignored, this instruction that God gave as part of the tenancy agreement. And the property owners caused much personal hardship to peasant families. They incurred a strong indictment from the prophet Isaiah. This is Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 8. Woe unto them that join house to house, that lay field to field. And you see what they're doing? They are doing land assemblies. They are accumulating vast estates. Woe unto them that join house to house, that lay field to field, till there be no room, and ye be made to dwell alone in the midst of the land. So the land-owning tycoons in Isaiah's day had put the whole covenant community in jeopardy of losing their promised land. And they did. This was written into the deeds. At so many points, the covenant people held their covenant land by a thread. And meanwhile, all day long, every day, God held out his arms. This is towards the end of Isaiah. I have spread out my hands all the day unto a rebellious people that walk in a way that is not good after their own thoughts, a people that provoke me to my face continually. It's an amazing picture of a people neglecting the law, behaving indifferently. Amos said they're grinding the face of the poor and they're selling them for a pair of shoes. Isaiah later on says, they're joining house to house, they're laying field to field, there's going to be no room for the ordinary people. I have spread out my hands all the day. This is God's this day. If you hear the voice of the Spirit, do not harden your hearts. Understand that today, this day, is the acceptable time. Today, this day, is the day of salvation. It's always like that. Throughout Israel's history, you'll find that again and again God brings them to a place where effectively he says, choose you this day who you will serve. Will you renew the covenant? Will you have your covenant renewal event that brings you back to the beginning so that you can start all over again? Again and again they'll come back to that place. Again and again they'll come to valleys of decision. It was in a valley of decision in the next generation after Moses that Joshua gathered the people together and said, "Choose you this day whom you will serve. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." Every day he holds out his hands. Every day, in small and sometimes big events, we have to face this choice. Choose you this day whom you will serve. As we choose his will, we take another step, and wherever our foot lands, that land is yours. It's yours by conquest as you've obeyed the direction of God. But if you go your own way, then everything that you've enjoyed thus far stands in jeopardy. You may lose your entire right to the land. This is an amazing event. The last day in the life of Moses, and I'm going to stop there and return, God willing, to this point next week. So thank you again for spending this time with us. We do appreciate your company, and we appreciate all your contact. Do tell us what you think about these things, especially if you think we can do something better. And so, God willing, until same place, same time, next week, we trust to meet again. Thank you for being with us. God bless you.